where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report. You found us on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Mitters, here at First String Sports. Come on down here to First String Sports. Please, please, this is definitely the place to be. The weather's beautiful out there, man. I anticipate there's going to be a lot of people out doing some stuff. I mean, baseball season is upon us. I see a lot of people coming into First String Sports, getting their baseball gear, baseball bats, gloves. This is a place to get your Letterman's jacket. I'm in the Letterman's jacket room right now. When you walk into First String Sports here on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon, just come on in, veer to the right a little bit, talk to one of the great sales representatives here, and they'll hook you up with the Letterman's jacket. All right, 2 hours of pure high school sports talk here on 1430 ESPN. We are in the thick of high school playoffs. If you follow anything high school related, you know that this is the nitty-gritty time, man. This is crunch time. Next week already, next Saturday, actually at this moment, in a week, there's going to be games played at Celand Arena. Friday and Saturday is the big event. The last couple years, the home teams have hosted the Central Section Championships, but this year, it's back at Celand Arena, where it should be. There's been some improvements to the floor there at Celand Arena. To me, it's a great venue. A lot of people compare Save Mart Center to Celand Arena, and a lot of people love the old-style feel of Celand. The seats are, you know, appropriately placed and positioned, and it's just a great place to watch basketball. So next week, starting Friday, are going to be the Central Section Championships, boys and girls divisions, 1 through 6. We're going to be talking about the playoffs, a little bit of a preview as well for the games next week. The girls are going to be playing on Tuesday. The boys are going to be playing on Wednesday. And then, like I said, Friday and Saturday are the championships. So for the next 2 hours, again, high school talk here on 1430 ESPN. Coming up after the break, be talking with Chris Schultz. Chris Schultz has been a friend of mine for, heck, since the early 1990s, went to Fresno Pacific together, but he was the boys basketball coach at Fresno Christian for a lot of years, was the athletic director there, followed John Moore to Westmont College. Actually, didn't follow him. John Moore left to go to Westmont College to be the boys men's basketball coach. Chris Schultz joined his staff and then became the women's coach. That's an interesting story as well for a season. So he spent the last 10 years as a pastor with Brad Bell at the Well Church. You guys know Brad Bell from Fresno State football fame. So really looking forward to talk to Chris Schultz just about his experience as a coach, athletic director, and then in the ministry. You know, talk about the hearts of student athletes and coaches and mentorship and just a lot of good stuff. It's good to kind of keep a good framework on athletics sometimes. So really looking forward to talk to Chris Schultz. He's got a couple Boy Grant stories as well. Yeah, Boy Grant, one of the most famous Fresno State basketball coaches of all time. Looking forward to that. The bottom of hour number one, Adam Wall, girls basketball coach at Buchanan. They're going to be facing Clovis West in the semifinals of Division I bracket. And Alani Oliver, a really good player for the Bears and for Coach Wall, the leading scorer as a junior. She's coming on the show. Again, they beat Central last week, and now they're going to be taking on Clovis West. You know, obviously they're in the same league, played each other twice. So looking forward to talk to Coach Adam Wall and Alani Oliver. At the top of hour number two, Bob Barnett, you know the name, Central Section historian, coming on. He came on last year. He's just, I mean, I can't overstate this enough. He's just a wealth of information. I mean, he knows anything and everything about the records in the Central Section. He's coming on the show. He's going to be sharing with us some of the all-time great scoring leaders, boys and girls, some of the great all-time basketball teams in Central Section history, what teams have the most Central Section championships in history. I mean, I guess you could compare him to somebody like Gandalf, or, you know, just he's a wizard. He has books and books and binders everywhere in his house. He's very neat and orderly. I've been to his house. It's an incredible experience. So Bob Barnett, Central Section historian, coming on the show, top of hour number two. At the bottom of hour number two, Gabe Camarillo, host of Home Field Advantage. You know him. You listen to him. 3 to 5, Monday through Thursday. Chopping it up with Gabe, as we always do. He took a drive last night. He took a drive to Santa Maria. Guy is a gamer, absolutely. So he wanted to see firsthand that great matchup between number 6, San Joaquin Memorial, and number 3, St. Joe's. Won by St. Joe's by a basket, little bit of a controversial ending. I'll wait for Gabe to come on our show to explain what happened in that one. But, man, we knew that was going to be a really good game. San Joaquin Memorial is as talented as anyone in the Central Section, and they definitely proved it playing at St. Joe's. They fell 65-63. A game that I was at last night, Clovis North, the 2 seed. Bakersfield Christian High School, the 7 seed. They are defending D1 champions, if you remember that. So, again, reminder, no open division in the Central Section this year. Division 1 has 12 teams. But Bakersfield Christian, they are defending D1 champs. Clovis West are the defending open champs. They might meet in the championship. Why? Well, because Bakersfield Christian came to Clovis North last night and beat them 60-57. It was a very sloppy first half. I threw out some stats there on Twitter last night. In the first half, Clovis North held a 23-16 lead. The teams combined for 23 turnovers, though, and shot a combined 14-59. The second half was a different story. Had a little more flow to it. Obviously, a lot more shots made. The score ended up being 60-57. But Gabe Gutierrez for Bakersfield Christian, point guard, underclassman, he was on fire in the second half, scored 21 of his 25 points in the second half. And, the Eagles and Coach Garrett Brown were able to come down to Clovis and take down the number 2 Clovis North Broncos. I thought Bakersfield Christian really turned it up in the second half. They made plays when they had to. Clovis North, they had a lot of chances, I'll be honest. They missed a lot of shots, especially in that first half. Up 7 in the first half, and they just got cold. The cold streak continued for the most part in the second half. Lucas Jones had a really good game for Clovis North, but that sets up a matchup between St. Joe's, Bakersfield Christian. On the top of the bracket, the number 1 seed, Clovis West, they were able to hold off number 8, Mission Prep, 59-41. Pretty tight game in the first half, as they always seem to do. Golden Eagles ran away with it in the second half. And who will they be facing? Well, they'll be facing Stockdale of Bakersfield. They played number 4, Centennial. We've talked a little bit about, all those Bakersfield teams. Bakersfield Christian, Centennial, Stockdale, who's the better of the 3? Well, Centennial is missing their best player. And last name is Gill. And, Rippin' Gill. He, unfortunately, 6'6". And he had to miss that game due to injury, so Stockdale took advantage of that. So it's going to be Stockdale at Clovis West on Wednesday. It's going to be Bakersfield Christian at St. Joe's on Wednesday for a trip to the Central Section Finals on Saturday. Go over a couple more scores here before we hit the break and bring on Chris Schultz. So in Division 2, if you guys didn't follow on Twitter, what a wild week for Sunnyside High School. Sunnyside High School in Division 2, they're the 16 seed. They played, obviously, the number 1 seed at Lamar. They beat Lamar. They upset the number 1 seed, 53-42. It's only the second time in Central Section history that a 16 has beat a 1. In that game, and Coach Duckworth of the Sunnyside Wildcats was on Gabe Camarillo's show, and he was very open and honest, talking about there was a skirmish, some fisticuffs in that game. A lot of kids were kicked out of that game. It's an unfortunate situation. I believe 6 Sunnyside players were kicked out of the game. So what that meant is they had to sit out the next game. Some Lamar players, I think 2, were kicked out of that game. So Sunnyside was missing all those players for the entire second half when they beat Lamar. Well, they're going to be facing Ridgeview on the road. Ridgeview is the 9 seed. They beat El Diamante. So they're shorthanded. They only had 3 players with varsity experience for that game against Ridgeview. And what did they do? They won. They won with 4 JV guys. They won 69-68 following that game on Twitter. And I'm like, hey, Sunnyside, they're hanging tough. They were down like 5 at one point. And then next thing I know, they win that game. So Sunnyside beats Ridgeview with four JV guys and three varsity guys. Unreal story. Clovis fell to Porterville, so it's going to be Sunnyside and Porterville, the top of the bracket in D2. And Dinuba beat Central. A lot of talk about that game. Central was the 11th seed. They beat Selma. Dinuba held on to beat Central. Congrats to the Emperors. They're going to be facing Aurora Grande, who beat Liberty of Bakersfield. So next week's Division II games, again, we got Sunnyside and Porterville and Dinuba and Aurora Grande. All right, really quick, I'm going to mention Division III boys. Sierra defeated Hanford. They're going to be facing West of Bakersfield. And Kingsburg, the Vikings, have gone down to Bakersfield twice. In the opening round, they beat North 54-43. Well, they beat South last night. So Kingsburg is going to be playing Independence, another Bakersfield school. So 3-for-3, drive down 99 to face another Bakersfield school. So again, Division III boys, going to be Sierra and West and Kingsburg and Independence. We're going to be trying to get to more scores when I talk to Gabe Camarillo at the bottom of hour number two. But next, we got Chris Schultz, former boys basketball coach at Fresno Christian, athletic director at Westmont College, coming up on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
As an expression of all that this country stands for.
Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Netter, here on 1430 ESPN. I want to welcome Chris Schultz to the program. He's a four-sports star. Can I say that, four-sports star? That was hard to say.
Yeah, you can.
All right, four-sports star at Fresno Christian. Graduated in 1991, went to Fresno Pacific, where I got to know him. He's coached football and basketball at Fresno Christian, athletic director, coached basketball at Westmont for a few years as an assistant. I have some great stories about that. And then became the women's coach for a year, right?
Yep, that's
a year
cool.
As a women's coach, and spent the last 10 years or so working at the Well Church with Brad Bell, who we know from Fresno State fame. So, I mean, all that to say, you've lived a full life already, Chris.
Well, and Paul, you and I were best men in each other's weddings.
We were.
I mean, that's a big deal, too.
We were. That's a huge deal. And, yeah, speaking of weddings, the last couple of days, Chris, my daughter's been back in town. She lives in Arizona. She got engaged. So they're trying on wedding dresses for the next 2 days. So talk about life changes and experiences. Oh, my gosh. Like, I don't know, man. Life's going pretty darn fast for us.
Well, you got three daughters. I've got four. So, yeah, that's part of our future. So we gotta prepare for that.
Yeah, and I saw a tag on one of the dresses. And let's just say I was a little speechless.
Yeah.
I didn't say much. You can't say, you know, oh, my gosh, yeah, of course, get whatever you want, honey. You know, you can't just say, yeah, get that dress. It's a big deal.
Well, you're doing such a good job on this show. I'm sure ESPN's going to give you a raise here anytime soon. So that'll pay for it all.
Well, yeah, maybe 2 years worth of being on ESPN might pay for a dress and maybe a couple bouquets of flowers.
Well, congratulations on that with Georgie.
Thank you, my friend.
That's special.
Thank you, my friend. I, you know, again, talking about your experiences, you know, you play basketball at Fresno Christian. You played a lot of sports, but a lot of people don't remember that Mike Penberthy, and that name comes up a lot around here. Penberthy, you know, NBA player, played for the Lakers, you know, won a championship as a coach as well. But he went to Fresno Christian.
He did.
For his first 2 years before going to Hoover. And you played with him. You're 2 years older, I believe. So, I mean, did you know back then you got any Penberthy stories that you can share?
Yeah, Mike was in Chicago with his family, and then and he transferred in halfway through my senior year. So my senior year, we went 24-3, lost the Valley Championship by one to Emmanuel, lost in the first round of the state playoffs. But, you know, it was one of the best years in school history. And at the time, I think we were like 14-1. And we've been playing together, some of us, since elementary school and then obviously through high school. And then Mike shows up. And Mike was a very confident young man as a sophomore. We used to call him the referee because in the middle of practice, he would literally call fouls. So, like, we'd be running a drill or whatever else, and he'd call a foul like he was the ref. And coach would say, that's not your job, Mike. Just play. And so, honestly, we didn't like him very much. I wish if I could take back time that we had embraced him a little bit more, because he was a sharpshooter. He was a fantastic player. Even back then, you knew he was going to be outstanding and play at a different level moving forward. And then for the Valley Championship, we were playing at Reedley against Emmanuel, and the guy forgot his jersey. So he ended up not playing for the first quarter and a half or whatever it was, and we lost by 1 point.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him personally for that. We missed some free throws and didn't box out, a few things like that. But who knows what would have happened if that guy had brought his jersey like he was supposed to.
Well, I think out of the list of basketball memories that Mike Pemberthy has, that one's probably like 2,748
exactly.
Or something. You know.
Yeah, I hold it as a grudge against him, but he doesn't even remember that he did that.
Probably would, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, he went to Hoover and the rest is history with that guy. But you also became friends with Boy Grant's son during that time, legendary men's basketball coach at Fresno State. And, would you go over to his house and just hang out? Would they make peanut butter jelly sandwiches for you after school? Or what was that like?
Kevin and I were best friends all through elementary school. So we both went to Fresno Christian, first grade. I moved out from Minnesota. And so when he was one of the first friends I made, and we were besties, we did everything. We played ball together. We hung out together. I remember they lived out on Marks in Herndon, and he had a pool that had the Bulldog logo at the bottom, you know what I'm saying, on it with tiles and the whole bit. And we'd swim there and we'd play ball. We had a great time. And then he eventually, when he transferred to Colorado State and was out there, then Kevin went out there and played ball. And we stayed in contact, Kevin and I, a little bit over the years. And then in 2002, I'm married. I'm living in this apartment complex off of Fresno and Herndon. And one morning I get up to go get the newspaper out in the front and I'm walking and there's somebody in like the community spa. And I'm looking, I'm like, that looks like Boy Grant. What's Boy Grant doing in my spa? And I'm like almost half naked. So I'm like, this is a little awkward. So I didn't say anything to him and go back in. And then a day later, I'm driving up into the complex and there he is again standing outside. And I'm like, I finally like, Boy, Chris Schultz, what are you doing? And so we embrace. He says, well, I'm here to see Kevin. Kevin lives in this complex. I'm like, what? Kevin's in this complex?
You had no idea.
I had no idea. And so that reconnected Kevin and I. Kevin's a lawyer here in town. And so over the years, Kevin and I stayed in touch. And obviously, even when Boyd passed away, I remember meeting with Kevin and just remembering Boyd and his impact and legacy, not only in the Valley in terms of basketball, but just the impact he had on people. He was a good man.
He was a very good man. And everyone speaks very, very highly of him. And obviously, Paul Loeffler does as well. Yeah. But, then you become – you stay true to Fresno Christian.
Yep.
And your dad was a principal there for a long time. And you became the basketball coach and then the boys basketball coach and then the athletic director.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, how did those times – how did those shape you? And then you wanted to become a college coach. But, just describe those times and how that shaped you as a coach.
I loved coaching high school sports. I coached football. I coached basketball. I was the athletic director. Obviously, I started coaching because when I was in high school, there were three guys, Jay Falcons, Joe Broussard, and Doug Green, who were all teachers and coaches who just personally influenced my life, not just with the way they treated me, but even their inclusion of me into their lives. And I got a firsthand experience of what it meant to see, oh, that's what it looks like to be a man. Oh, that's what it looked like to be a father or a husband or even just a follower of Jesus. And so they were so influential in me. It's like, I want to get into coaching. And so I followed kind of down that road and just spent years pouring myself into the lives of young people. And even yesterday, I had lunch and coffee with two of my former players, CJ Haydock, who's the head men's basketball coach right at Fresno Pacific University. So proud of that dude. He's amazing. And then Sam Babcock, who's a partner of a CPA firm here in town, right? And those were guys that played for me in the early 2000s. And we've just stayed in touch. And so that seasons of just investing in them when they were, 15, 16, 17 year olds, and just trying to figure out life and grow and mature to help them not only on the court but in life. And now to see them as fathers and husbands and being really successful and influential in our community, man, all worth all the investments that we made.
Absolutely. It's very, very satisfying and fulfilling. And talk with Chris Schultz here, a former boys basketball coach at Fresno Christian, athletic director, has been at the Well Church for the last 10 years. You've been around the kids for a long time. There we go. And I just want to ask you, Chris, a father yourself, you mentioned four girls. The heart of a high school kid, right? You hear about coaches all the time, sometimes they break kids, mm-hmm. sometimes in a good way, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but a lot of times in a bad way. Yep. And, to find that balance between coaching them up, right, and then investing them as a person, the heart of a high school kid is pretty tender, right, when you get down to it, right? And you can either fill them with good stuff or you could break them in a bad way. You know, where do you see mentorship and all that in relation to high school
kids? Yeah, I remember several dads coming to me during those years I was coaching, and they made comments to me like this: Chris, you have more influence on my son right now than I do. And some of them would be like, and I kind of resent you for that. And others were like, you need to understand that impact, and you need to steward that well. And so I felt that even back then, and then even more so over the years, of just recognizing that, yeah, you've got this, you know, 14, 15, 16, 18-year-old young man, young woman who's growing and maturing. Their brains aren't fully developed. They're being influenced by all of this stuff, especially in our day and age. And you get more time with them than their parents do.
Yeah.
You get more time with them. And so what you say and what you do and how you treat them and what's expected out of them and how you walk them through both the successful things and the challenging things, but also, you know, the failures and the times when they slip up, what that looks like to walk along them and help them grow and mature in a very significant season of life is super important. And I think, you know, coaching is a hard profession, but it's a worthwhile profession because of the impact that you can have. And if you win, man, that's awesome. Yeah. And of course, we're gonna compete at the highest level. But you realize those folks are gonna go on and become adults, and they're gonna go on and become parents and business owners and influential people in the community. And so I always felt like I wanted to be a person that was going to help them grow and mature. And it's been fascinating how many relationships with those kids I'm still in contact with. We traveled a bunch, and even on the road, I'm meeting up with former players.
Yeah, and what a lot of high school kids tell me is the bonding experience between players is impactful.
Yep.
The bus rides, the meals together, the pregame talks, all those things are extremely, extremely meaningful.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, the bonding – you know, how important is that as a coach? I know you got a lot of great memories yourself as a coach, right? With, you know, blasting music or having some kooky talks, you know, on the bus ride. Those are important.
My favorite memory, I tell the story a lot over the years, is that with 2002, we're playing in Fireball. If we win, we're going to win a league championship. It's the first league championship Fresno Christian's had in a long time. Had a good group of guys that over the last couple of years we've developed. We get to the game, and like Mike Penberthy, come to find out our starting point guard, John Steele, had forgotten his jersey back in Fresno. So he comes up to me in the third quarter, just as we're about ready to go into the locker room. He says, Coach, I forgot my jersey back in Fresno. He goes, my dad's in the car. He's trying to go pick it up. And we didn't have an extra jersey. This is how poor Fresno Christian was back then, right? We didn't have an extra jersey for him. So I'm like, well, then I guess you can't play, John. You know, like I'm bummed, or at least until your dad gets a jersey here. So 2 minutes later, two of our captains, Tim Haydock and John Weens, come up to me and they said, hey, coach, what if Josh Justin gave John his jersey and let him play? Now, Josh was probably 9 or 10 on our depth. You know, he played a little bit. He was a junior. But I'm like, no, I'm not making Josh give up his jersey for John. John forgot his jersey, so we're going to have to deal with it. A minute later, Josh walks up with his jersey and he hands it to me. He goes, Coach, I want John to have this jersey. And I'm like, Josh, did these guys make you do this? You do not. I'm not going to ask you to give up this jersey for John. And he looks at me. He goes, I care more about winning this championship than I do about playing today. Would you please take this jersey? And I looked at him. I said, okay. So we gave him the jersey, went and played the game. I have a plaque that I put on my wall. It's a picture of us in the locker room afterwards. Mm-hmm. We're all smiling. We're all putting up number ones. We got these big old grins. The person with the biggest grin on his face was Josh Justin. And he's sitting there with his jeans and his polo shirt on. He never got in the game. That jersey never got back from John's dad. And yet he was willing to sacrifice for the greater good. Well, Josh ended up being an assistant coach with me. He became the head coach at Fresno Christian, won two Valley championships at Selland, like you're talking about, several years ago with Cooper and Chandler and Brady Lee and all those guys. So I just so proud of him. But that's the kind of stuff, right? Those are the memories that I remember most. And I'm so grateful that's what sports did to develop that sort of character in them.
And you talk about your time as a coach, right? And mentorship and those great memories that I, you know, I've been covering high school sports for, you know, since 2014. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of coaches, invest in kids as well, but there's a flip side too, Chris. And I know with your mentorship program you run and your time at the well, you've seen a lot of burnout as well. You see a lot of coaches that aren't able to balance, you know, the winning. I mean, you're as competitive as anybody I know.
Yep.
And I got a few stories about that too. I don't know if we have time to share on air, but I know how competitive you are. But, you know, trying to find that balance in life is tricky, right? And what, you know, if there are coaches or players out there listening, you know, what type of advice would you give coaches about finding that balance and taking care of yourself and your family and sports?
Yeah, I mean, my wife will tell you, Jen, we've been married almost 24 years. You know, there are times when she would actually use the word that coaching felt like a mistress. It felt like I was giving so much to that. And those were times in the midst of it where I didn't always hear her. But over time, I started to pay more and more attention. So I think there's a couple different things for coaches. Is number one is I think at the end of the day, your coaching career will come to an end. But your marriage and your family and your faith, if you have that, those things are far more long-lasting. And so if you're going to sacrifice one for the other, you may pay the price long down the road. You may win some championships. You may, you know, have some good things said about you. So I think it's a bit of a balance where I know for myself over the years, I had to make sure that in connection with my relationship with Jen, that we were good in investing in that relationship. I tried my best with my kids to include them in what we did. They traveled a lot with us. They were at a lot of practices. They were involved in some of the things. So they didn't feel like they were getting neglected on behalf of the sport. And then for me, at some point, I made a decision to walk away from the sport, is to recognize I think there were some other things that were of higher priority for me. And people ask all the time, do you miss coaching? And I said, I miss the players. I miss some of the travels, the experiences. I miss my coaching staff. But overall, I think what I gained when I stepped away from the sport, I gained something a little bit more significant with my spouse, a little bit more significant in my soul. And now I can just be a fan of the game. I can go to games, and I don't lose any sleep over it. I encourage Haydock and, you know, Penberthy over Fresno Christian, and then go home and sleep really well.
That's great. That's great advice. You know, and you've been, you know, we've had a long-lasting relationship as well. I know you're moving to Colorado next week, so you know a lot of things are, in one sense, becoming final here in Fresno. You've definitely leaving a lasting impression on a lot of people, and you mentioned that. I'm glad you were able to say, hey, the championships are cool and winning those things, but, you know, the memories and the investment in kids is what's going to last a lifetime in your family as well. That's great stuff to hear publicly. So I really appreciate you, Chris, for coming on.
Yeah, and Paul, I just want to say, you and I are best friends for a long, long time. I love you. I'm grateful for you. I think you're really good at what you do here, and I think this show is outstanding. I love the fact that you celebrate and recognize what's happening in high school sports locally, and you're really good at it. and it's really needed in a day and age when so much of what's on the radio can be really critical. You're really affirming. And I know coaches and players love to chat with you, and I love the highlights that you bring to local sports and the good stuff that's happening, you know, with teams and schools and players and coaches. So good job to you. I'm proud of you. Love you.
All right. Love you too, my friend. And hey, I went on some of those road trips too, man. I remember going to Cambria to watch you coach football, and then go to Fowler and yell at some referees, you know, when you're playing the big games against Fowler, against Mike, who's an assistant coach at Bullard. So anyway, that's just a lot of good memories, my friend, and, you know, you're including a lot of that. So I appreciate you, love you forever, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
All right, coming up after the break, Coach Adam Wall, Lonnie Oliver from Buchanan Girls Basketball on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
I'm your host, Paul Metters. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. Man, what a great conversation just had with Chris Schultz. I know he's been a friend for a long time, but yeah, his wealth of knowledge and his able to put life into perspective, you know, it's remarkable. It is absolutely remarkable. We all need a little wellness check every once in a while and make sure we're doing okay and make sure we got everything in balance. So really appreciate Chris for coming on the show. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. If you miss any part of the show, you can go to the 1430 ESPN Fresno website, go to podcast. You could find my show, Central Valley Sports Report. Click on that. You can listen to any show that we've ever recorded in a year and a half here on 1430 ESPN. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had Tom Goodwin, Fresno State baseball star, 14-year career in the Major League Baseball World Series champ. So go back and listen to those episodes. It's a lot of fun bringing you high school sports. We have Adam Wall now, Lonnie Oliver, Buchanan girls basketball. Adam, how many years have you been?
This is my sixth season.
This is number six.
This is it. Yep.
This is year number six for Adam. So they're in the semifinals, Division One. They're going to be facing Clovis West on Tuesday. They beat Central 59-49. And Alani Oliver, you're junior, right?
I thought
you were
senior.
You're junior. So how many years have you been on varsity?
Since freshman year.
Freshman year. Yeah, I remember you on varsity. So, Adam, first of all, hey, thanks guys for coming on the show. You guys. Watching film, or what were you guys normally going to be doing on a Saturday?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having us. We appreciate it. We just got done with practice.
Okay.
Getting prepared for Tuesday's game. So.
Yeah. All right. So what time practice start? 7? 6:30.
Gym was open at 7:30. Went at 8 o'clock.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Come straight here to First String Sports. Thanks for coming on, Adam. I want to go back a little bit to the home game against Central. You got split in the regular season, right? You got
correct.
Split. What was the difference in this one, right? Central been playing some really good basketball, but you guys beat them 59-49. So what was the difference between when you guys lost to them and then the last game?
Yeah, Paul does a great job over there at Central, and he's got a lot of really good players, Talia Maxwell and Kitana, the point guard. The first time we played them in league at their place, we obviously won that game. Then they came to our place and beat us. One of the biggest how they beat us was they shot the ball really, really well. Kitana, I think she had 28 points. I believe she had 6 threes. So they shot the ball extremely well and really did well on the offensive glass, and that really hurt us. So we tried to get our hands out, contest shooters, block out, limit them to one shot, and then on the other side, hopefully execute a little bit better offensively. So that's kind of what happened.
So, Lonnie, what was the mentality going into that game against Central? Playoff time, right? So it's like, you know, do or die, right? You don't want the season to end on a game like that. But what was the mentality that you and your teammates had going into the Central game?
The mentality that we had was to rebound, crash the boards. Like Coach Wall always tells us, Pat Riley says, no rebounds, no rings. So we knew we had to crash the boards, get rebounds, and that's what was going to win the game.
Absolutely, and you guys did a great job with that. So, Adam, I want to ask you this too. So, going into that game, actually, I think Clovis North, right? You played them in the last game of the league, and you beat them. But you had lost four in a row before that. You know, basketball season's a long; it's a grind. Did you, like, how did you, you and your coaching staff, you know, shape those weeks? You're like, hey, are we going to speed things up? Are we going to slow things down? You know, what did you guys do as a staff to kind of get through those four games?
Yeah, we met as a staff, and then we met as a team, and we came back, and the bottom line was we just went back to the core values of our program, commitment, accountability, work ethic, competitiveness, and just talked to the girls about that. It wasn't anything we were doing. We just had to kind of come together and go back to the core values and the basics of our game and get the girls feeling good again. The track is obviously a very competitive league. This year is probably the most competitive from the top to bottom it's been, I think, since I've been at Buchanan in 6 years. So that's, you know, one of the reasons every night's a dogfight. You're going into every game, whether it's home or away, and you have to, your girls, each team has to be ready to play.
No, I agree. I agree. You know, usually in track, you got six teams, obviously, and one team you could pretty much count. Oh, yeah, that's going to be a win. I mean, for me, not as coaches, obviously, but I'm like, yeah, that should be a win for this team. But this year was no different. You obviously have Clovis West, and, you know, Clovis East had a really good team as well. So, anyway, I know the track is definitely a grind. I want to ask you, Adam, what does Alani mean to the program? What she's the only junior, has a year left, and, you know, hopefully a couple more basketball games. But what does she mean to the program?
Oh, man, she's a tremendous asset to our program. When I got the job, she was in seventh grade, and I remember being in Alta Sierra and watching her and just being like, this girl's going to be very special. Obviously she's a big time athlete, but most importantly, outside of the basketball accomplishments and what she does, she's an unbelievable human being. She works her tail off. She's a high character kid, really good teammate. But she's a big part of our program. She's our leading scorer. She has numerous double-doubles on the year. It's funny because we have these games, and I'm like, oh, Alani didn't play great. And then I look at the stats, and next thing I know, there's the last game, 15 and 15 or 24 and 12, and I'm like, holy moly, this girl can go. She's just a very special player. The term that I like to use to describe her on the floor is she's a stat stuffer.
Yeah.
She just, you know, deflections and steals and so forth. But like I said, most importantly, she's a big-time human being.
And I saw some highlights of her. I've watched her play over the last 3 years too, but seeing the highlights, and when she gets downhill, she's tough to stop.
Yes,
right. She's tough to stop, and a couple threes too. So she's expanded her game.
Yes. Her shot over this last summer and fall has improved tremendously. She's shooting about 38. I think it's like pushing 39% from the three, which is really, really good.
And I don't know if you guys heard, but talking with Chris Schultz, who has a lot of experience as an athletic director and as a coach, and just how he pours into the team, and just the bus rides are, you know, I know, Adam, we'll get into a little bit, but you know, you played high-level basketball as well, but the bus trips, the road trips, the meals together, how important those are, the team bonding. Lonnie, is there some fun things that you and your teammates have done this year that's brought you guys together? Are there any special moments that you can share?
Yes, definitely. I would say the van rides for sure, going up to where we're playing. Just being with my team really brings us together. We tell stories, we listen to music, we jam out to music. Like, those are literally my sisters in a way. And I just love being around them.
And I know whenever I talk to Coach Wall, I see him in the summer sometimes, he's like, yeah, we're going to Chicago, or we're going to New York for this tournament. I don't know. We're going to probably Europe next. I don't know where you take all these girls. But you certainly like these road trips, man. How important are those types of trips, you know, before league starts or in the summer, you know, to build that chemistry?
Yeah, we like to travel and go out of town and play, especially in June. We go to all the college team camps, and then in July is the NCAA viewing periods. And what we do is, instead of all of our girls playing for separate AAU teams, we just have our own AAU teams with our high school kids. So we go to last year went to Chicago, we went to Denver, you know, obviously up and down California. So those are great opportunities for our girls to get exposure. Those are the ones that are fortunate to get recruited and play in college, and it's worked in our program. But most importantly, every year I ask them, do you guys want to continue to do this? And they want to.
Yeah.
So it's a player-driven thing. It's not me. Hey, we have, you know, it's what they want to do, and they enjoy it. They like it. And obviously, you know, you don't remember the wins and losses. Some of them you do, but it's most importantly the relationships and different things that they build in those moments.
Absolutely. Lonnie, what are some of your first memories of basketball? Did you always love basketball, or did you play other sports? But when did you first fall in love with basketball?
I fell in love with basketball at 3 or 4 years old. It's because my brothers, all they did was play basketball. I have no sisters, so if I wanted to play, I couldn't play with Barbies with them. And so they're like, if we play with you, you're going to have to either play basketball, you know. So I was like, okay. So I picked up a basketball, fell in love with it instantly.
How much older are they than you?
It goes from my youngest brother is 2 years younger than me.
Okay.
And to my oldest brother is 7 years older than me.
7 years older.
Yes.
Did they ever, you know, not take it easy on you in basketball? Like, did you go run, you know, crying to mom and dad sometimes or what?
Yes, I did. Actually, and they would tell me, you know, you chose to play with them. So you're going to have to tough it out, and if you want to keep playing, you have to play with them. If tough, you can't cry. You have to keep going. You know, you can't quit.
What other sports did you play growing up?
Mainly basketball, but I tried track for a little bit, but stuck with basketball.
Okay. I think you made a good call on that. Do you watch a lot of college basketball, or do you watch, you know, WNBA or NBA? I like to play basketball?
I'm starting to watch a few college basketballs now. I really enjoy watching Michigan. I like watching them.
All right.
I just think the way, like on the boys' side, like the way how they play together, I think it's kind of how, like, our team is in a way.
And Adam, you know, you obviously have a lot of coaching experience and playing experience. Talk about your timeline so you went to Central High. What years did you graduate Central?
2001.
2001. Yep. And then you played with Vance, right, at Fresno City. Talk about your playing career a little bit, and then your coaching career to where you are today.
Yeah, so I got done playing at Central, graduated there, redshirted at Fresno Pacific for 1 year.
That's it, okay.
And then went to City, played 2 years, and then I was fortunate to get a scholarship to play at Colorado Mesa in Colorado, Division II school for 2 years. Came back, Vance got the job at Pepperdine, and I wanted to continue to stay involved in basketball, so it was a great opportunity for me to come back. So I went to Pepperdine for 2 years. I was just a volunteer.
That's a tough place to live, though.
Yeah.
I don't know how you
I was sleeping on the floor, trying to arrow bed, trying to survive. It was great, though. Volunteer, and then I was a video coordinator, and then came to Fresno City, coached with Ed Maddock for 2 years, and then from Fresno City, I was fortunate to get a coach assistant job at Metro State in Denver, Colorado, Division II school. And had a great run there for 7 years, and then decided it was time to come back home, family, and have an opportunity to coach at Buchanan and teach full time, you know, teach PE and kind of start my own program.
And I hinted on it a little bit with Chris Schultz when he was on, but he did that grind too. So you followed Vance to Pepperdine, Chris went to Westmont, Santa Barbara, and with Coach Moore, similar experiences, man. Sleeping in a different place. He was married at the time. Just working, you know, still, I don't know, Chris, it's like sold T-shirts, right, to make money, right? I mean, how tough – I don't think people really realize when you want to break into college coaching, right, when you want to start that grind, how difficult it can be.
Yeah, at Pepperdine, I remember driving out there, meeting with Vance on the beach, and he's like, well, I don't have any money to pay you, but you can come coach. And I was like, sounds good, cool. So I drove back to Colorado, came back, and I literally slept on – his floor for a little bit, and then the assistant coaches got a house, and I slept on an arrow bed. I had to pay rent, so I coached. I did individual lessons in the area. I coached a little AU team, just trying to hustle and make a couple bucks and survive. And then Ed Maddock gave me a great opportunity to come back. I worked on my master's degree. I got that done. I taught a couple classes at Fresno City, and then I got a full-time gig out at Metro State, which was great. And that was kind of my opportunity to take that next step as a nationally ranked Division II. We were really, really good. Guys on that team that are still playing professionally. And then, you know, my wife and I had our family. They're all born in Denver. And then it was time to, like, you know what, let's settle down and move back home and teach and coach at Buchanan.
And that there's a lot to be said for that, and raise your family in this great community that we have here.
Yes.
And you're facing a team that you're very familiar with in Clovis West. And, you know, the way I describe when Clovis plays Clovis in the playoffs, it's like, you guys know each other so well, right? You know the team's tendencies. You know the players. You've coached against them. I mean, you know everything. So when you play a team like Clovis West that you're very familiar with and you play them twice during the season, do you have to change some things up? Do you have to try something different? You know, what's the mentality going into playoffs as opposed to playing them in league?
Yeah, I think each time you play a team, whether it's Clovis West, Clovis, any of the teams we play in our league, you're continuing to tweak the different things that you're doing, evaluating tape, evaluating your decisions during the game, evaluating the players that you're putting in different areas on the floor and what you're doing. So we are continuing to tinker things to create opportunities for us to score, and then obviously on the flip side, to stop them in certain situations.
Yeah, and Alani, I know you still have a year left. You got your senior year, but what are some of your college goals? And you know, where would you like to do at the next level?
My college goals is just to be with the team that has great cohesiveness, that plays together. Just at the next level, I just want to be able to fit in wherever I choose to go. Either that's D2 or D1. As long as I'm happy, as long as I feel welcome with the team, then I'll be.
Excellent. And what do you like to study?
Right now, I'm actually in a class, anatomy and physiology, so I'm really enjoying that. When I get to college, I want to, you know, expand in the medical field.
Okay.
Either a physician assistant or a radiologist.
Oh, man. Adam, you got quality kids on your program, don't you?
Very lucky. Oh, very, gosh. Very lucky.
So who, you know, describe Alani's game a little bit more and just what, you know, again, you got a game on Tuesday, but it's fun to look forward to a little bit, but, you know, what would she bring to any type of a college program?
First off, high character. That's number one, the best thing about her, and in my opinion, the most important thing about her. High character, academically very strong, on the floor, big-time athlete, running and jumping, changing directions, yeah. Defending, high level. Her three-point shooting has improved tremendously this last year, and just getting to the hoop. That's probably one of the best things that she does is living in that paint and getting to the rim.
All right. Awesome. Thank you guys for coming in. I really appreciate you. Adam, it's good to see you, man. Yeah. I always love meeting up with you and talking with you. And, you know, walking out the door, talk with Chris Schultz, and you're like, hey, I live, you know, in Colorado where he's about to move to. So the connections here in the Central Valley are super, super strong, the coaching fraternity and all that. So always fun to run into you. So Tuesday, 6 o'clock at Clovis West, Buchanan girls will be facing, they are the 4 seed facing number 1 Clovis West. Thank you guys for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
You bet. Coming up after the break, top of hour number 2, Bob Barnett, Central Section historian, talking about records, more records, some of the best teams ever in the Central Section. Who are the high scorers in history, boys and girls side? I can't wait to talk to Bob Barnett. Coming up on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. That's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report. Good morning to you guys. Thanks to Lee's Air Heating and Plumbing for being one of our sponsors. Thanks to First String Sports. It's where I do my show live every Saturday morning, 10 to 12. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Great first hour. Talked with Chris Schultz about his time at Fresno Christian, being a mentor to coaches around the Central Section. Talked with Adam Wall, Alani Oliver. What a great combo. Coach Wall and Alani Oliver were she's just a fantastic young woman, really good player. Buchanan girls take on Clovis West on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. I want to welcome Bob Barnett to the show. He's our Central Section historian. His archives stretch back to the beginning of the Central Section, has records of virtually every school in the section, devotes countless hours to his craft. He was on the show last year. The time went by way too fast last year, so if you see Bob Barnett at any game, you know, you see him there at basketball games in the front row and wears his Central Section historian jacket. You brought in a box of stuff. I don't know if we have enough time
to
talk
all of it. To go over that.
Oh, my gosh. This is
this morning. I know.
It's just a small sample of everything that you keep track.
You're right.
You got binders and binders of Central Section archives.
Paul.
Yeah.
This is the first time in 38 years that information has left my home.
Do you have some type of a sensor on that, right? When you leave the house, it might go off. Those records have never seen the light of day.
No, and they're going back after this show. I'm going straight home, and they're going back in my home.
I'm surprised you don't have that under lock and key in suitcase, right? Or only you, your thumbprint can open it up. Only you.
Only me, because most all the information I have on individuals and schools, it's not on computer. I like hard copies of everything I do, and I know where everything is located. I if you ask me a question, I could answer your question faster than I could start up the computer.
And I know that firsthand.
Yeah.
You've invited me to your house, and it is as advertised. It's a museum, Bob. I got to be honest. And you've done a fantastic job. You work well with schools. You know, and your record keeping is impeccable. You know, your ability to bring up information quickly. I mean, when I was at your house, I said, well, what about track and field? And you go, oh, right here. And you bring it out, and you had penciled archives from 1906 in the history. You know, there's a gap in World War II. So anyway, Bob, you've done an amazing job. How long have you taken this job serious?
Since 1985, this is my 38th year. And how much time do I put on in 38 years? It's every week, the last 38 years. It might not be every day, but it's every week. And most of the time during the season, it is every day, okay? But I really got hooked in high school sports in 1958. I was at Edison High School, the junior high. It was called Edison Junior High School. And my uncle, John Ciano, he took me to see Edison play at Kearney Bowl. That's where Al Pomble and Marshall Sargent used to race. But in the middle, there was a football field. And he took me to that game. I was about 12 years old. And he said, see that player down there? I said, yes. He said, that's Vesty Jackson. He is very good. Okay? I don't want to cry on your show. Okay? Years later, I worked for Martin Oil at Almond Church, okay, is Richfield Station. I finally got to meet Vesty Jackson in person. And in the back seat was his son, Vesty Jackson, and a daughter. And I asked him, and I didn't know all the history at that time because I was only about 19 years old. I said, why didn't you go on and play after Fresno City College, okay? He said, I started a family, and I had to work. And later, I did research later about Vesty, and I've talked to Pete Meas at one time, and even Pete nodded his head because Pete Meas did play with Vesty 1 year. So he's one of the great ones that played at Fresno City College and at Edison High School. So that's how I really got started. Then from 12 years old, because I was the last class, I was at Edison for 6 years, not just 4 years. So I got to meet a lot of the great players in basketball that played at Edison, you know. I mean, I could go on and on, but I got hooked on high school sports at an early age. I mean, I used to jump the fence at McLean High School and watch track and field. Porky Jones from Delano, that's the name of the pass, you know. Bob Channel, the high jumper, 6'9 and a quarter. And, I mean, it goes on and on. I love track and field, okay? I still do. I mean, I was there in Berkeley, California, when we won the state championship in 1963. I was there. And who took me? He was like my second father. I swear. His name was Ray Cruz. He was one of the Cruz brothers that owned me Rancho Tortilla. Okay? He was like, for 6-7 years, I was like a son to him. And he had Larry, who he adopted, you know. And Ray took me and his wife, Bertha. Okay? Later on, he had an open division basketball team, the city did in those years. And I got to meet a lot of the great players from Edison High School, from Johnny Hampton to Huey Davis to Harvey Green to Bobby Washington to Charles Lowe. I mean, it goes on and on, and Hart Polk. I know them all. Back in the 50s, they were playing. Edison had great teams in those years, you know. Then they hit a low, and then Fresno High took over. Lee Angelich, great coach. Been in my home a couple times, you know. And he had great players. And when he said, how I beat Edison, I outsmarted him. You know, and he did. They won. Fresno High then took over. And Edison didn't win another Valley Championship until my brother came along. And my brother was on the varsity for 3 consecutive years, you know. And this is hard to talk about, but I
very good player.
You know, very good. A couple of months ago, my brother just passed away, and I couldn't believe.
There were a lot of people, Bob, that went to the funeral. It meant a lot to you.
It meant a lot to me. And what I told everybody that was there, because what I learned at Edison High School, you cannot teach that in a classroom or a textbook. I went to school with beautiful people of all races.
Yeah.
I learned that at an early age. Color does never bothered me, never bothered me. And I looked at the group, and I did speak, and I said, I love all of you that came today.
Well, sports are very important, Bob.
Yes, they are.
Very important to people. Your records you've kept, but it's mainly about the people.
It's about the people. It is about us. The central section's not about me. I'm only bringing out what's happened since 1892, starting with Frank Chance playing football for Fresno High. That's what it's all about. It's about us, all the schools, not just one school. And it's about boys and girls, not just boys. Okay? I want that very clear. Because when I started this back in the 80s, girls weren't giving that much coverage.
Do you think the San Joaquin Memorial girls program back then really
they were
put
really
in the forefront?
That good under Mary Brown?
Yeah.
Here's a real quick story, okay? Because you get me talking. Man,
I love it, Bob.
We're going to run out of time. I went to Mary Brown's home, and she had a partner, was the same sex, okay? That never bothered me. And my wife, Norma, knew. And I was gone for over 6 hours that day. And they treated me with coffee, cookies, and I dissected everything in her scorebooks. She had everything. That's how it started with mm-hmm. Salma King Ramoya on girls basketball. Every game by game, I was writing down everything. And I got home. My wife says, "Boy, you were gone a long time today." I said, "Honey, it was a very special day." Then later, I did go back to finish up. But Salma King Ramoya was the real deal. And I don't judge people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, Bob, you've done a fantastic job keeping track. We have some records that we definitely want to talk about. You have your binders open. So I want to get to some of the great scores, all-time scores in boys
okay.
in Central Section history. You got your blue binder there.
Yes.
And looking over those names, looks like you got the top, is that nine right there or eight? And all those names are very familiar to me, and I think
right.
they're going to be very familiar to our listeners. So why don't you go ahead and lead off.
Let me start
at the top and just tell us some of these names.
Because there's a story there with Trevon Willis, Washington Union. That young man had four different coaches, okay? It wasn't for my determination and help from Jeff Cardoza. Would never, never would have known that he scored 2,843 points. He leads the section in careers. And Paul Lefter, when he was doing announcing for this TV station, and he even brought that up. It wasn't for me that Trevon would have never known how many points that he scored. But he does lead the section all time. And I thought Cole Anderson had a shot at it, but it was a short
COVID,
season.
COVID season got him.
Hurt that. But anyway, let's go to Cole Anderson because he's number two all time, okay? And there's a story behind that. How do I do this? I got attached to him, and it's personal, okay, with Cole Anderson because I was going through rough times after Norma passed. And
well, he's one of the greatest shooters of all time, Bob. We were both there when he scored 51 points.
10 consecutive threes,
yeah.
Which became a California state record. Well, you and I, Paul, will never forget
nope.
that. Never forget that. But I had to tell my brother at the time, I said, "Brother, I found somebody that could shoot the ball better than you," and it was Cole Anderson. He was a pure shooter, just like my brother Dave was, you know.
He's at UC Santa Barbara right
yes.
now. 2,730 points for
yes.
Cole in his career.
Okay, let's go to number two. Number three, Grant Verhoeven, Central Valley Christian. And that was special following his career. In rebounds, he had over 1,000 rebounds, over 15. He might – did I bring that? I didn't bring that binder. I don't think so. I think he might have the most rebounds in section history, too. He's a very good rebounder. And Grant, Stephon Carter out of Garces, Bakersfield. He was a very good player. He's coaching now, too, okay? He ended up with 25-89. And, okay, let's move on to Sean Stevenson.
Oh, one of the greats.
I had a tell this coach. We were in Long Beach in the state playoffs, and Washington Union was playing this team, and the coach was walking out, and I was walking out with him. I said, "You're going to lose by about 17 points." He looked at me. "You want to know something?" It was pretty close to that. They never had a chance.
Yeah.
Okay? You're dreaming. And they did win the state championship that year. They would have won two. They would have won two straight back-to-backs if Jeffries didn't get hurt. Because they only lost by 1 point, and he was worth 20 points. And that's when Luke Walton was playing. They were way better than that team, and they went on to win the state. That's how good Washington Union was. I'm not kidding you. You know, they would have won back-to-back easily, and they won one. So
Deshaun, one of the greats, went straight to the NBA, drafted by the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, let's see this one. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Well, a couple great San Joaquin Memorial players.
Jalen Green.
Yeah.
He only played 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay. He scored 2,350 points. And He would have scored way over 3,000. He would have been the record holder.
He would probably average about 32, 35 points a game his senior year.
Yeah, I think he led the section in scoring.
Yeah.
And then right behind him was Joseph Hunter. He's at Fresno State redshirting this year. And I saw his saw him grow each year. You know, it's fun to see how they grow each year, these players, you know. Anyway, Joseph Hunter ended up with 2,337 points. And let's see. Oh, this was a good one, too. Darren
Pearson
Jr., Emmanuel, your
alma mater?
Yeah. He ended up with 2,305 points, and he was very good. Let's go.
Here we got one more. So, Darren.
One more. Yeah. Bryson Williams, Roosevelt High School. He ended up with 2,302 points. So that's on that list. But I have
– and a lot of those guys, Bob, are four-year varsity players.
Yes.
You mentioned Jalen Green, left his senior year to go play at the prep school up north, and even Cole Anderson's COVID year.
I'm going to show you something.
What do you got?
That nobody's seen, okay? Even Sam Kimmerer Memorial doesn't have the numbers, okay? This is Sam Kimmerer Memorial. Roscoe Pondexter, 2,288 points. Clifton Pondexter, 2,215 points. Roscoe's son, Quincy, I believe he's at Washington now.
Correct, assistant basketball coach, yep.
2,231 points. I mean, three Pondexters on my second page. Pretty special,
yeah. You
know. And let's see what else.
Well, the J.R. Henderson from East, I remember he went to UCLA, didn't he?
I was there when they won the state. We were in Los Angeles, and I took Cruz with me, the coach at Carruthers, Ron. Cruz. We went together. He drove, and we went to Anaheim. And we watched J.R. and East Bakersfield win the state championship.
So it was probably 1994,
That was 94.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was special. That was a special night. And we didn't get home till like 3 in the morning. And I had to drive home from Carruthers at 3 in the morning, you know. So I've been going everywhere, you know. But
talking with Bob Barnett about Central Section historian. You see him at basketball games. I know, Bob, you've done some research, too, on father-son duels. Just really quick,
Father,
you have some fun father-son.
Yeah. Just the top of my head. Roscoe, of course, and Quincy. Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we had Frank Johnson, played at Edison High School, and his son Frankie Johnson that played at Bullard High School. And, of course, my brother Dave and his son Dave Jr. Barnett, you know, they both played at Edison High School. So those three families were pretty darn good.
No, they were. So, they were absolutely legends for sure. And next weekend, Bob, we have the Central Section Championships at Selland Arena. That's always a special time. And you have your spot that you just sit and watch basketball and keep up with your records. But there's some special people that are going to be honored, right?
Yes,
we've visited that the last couple years. So
I
believe in between the girls Division I championship game and the boys game, there's a few players that are a few people in the Central Section that are going to be honored, and you are part of that.
I'm going to start. We're going to honor Andy Bogart, longtime sports writer at the Fresno Bee. He covered high school at two different times, covered city college, some city college. But his forte was, well, mostly high, but he did a great job covering Fresno State under Jim Sweeney, okay? Andy was dedicated. I like people that are dedicated, okay? And that's why I'm in charge of this, so I have been since day one. He's done a lot of good things in his life, okay? And I go back. His father's 98 years old, okay? He could lose him in any day now. But his father, when I first put out my first football book in 1992, he volunteered to sell some of those books, 25 to 30 of them in Hanford, and he did. And the money that we made on the books, I think we printed about 500 of them. All the money I donated to the CIF, I didn't keep the money, okay? When I started this, it's not about money. It's about something I wanted to do. And I'm very compassionate what I do. And years ago, when I got hooked up with Nelson Tennis, the founder of Cal High Sports, and we became really good friends. You know, at one time, Nelson was homeless. A lot of people don't know that. And I gave him a TV. I gave him two chairs that I got from the Fresno Bee. I didn't tell him where they were going, you know. But I liked Nelson. And we had the same thing in common. And then we were in Oakland. Did I mention that before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got that. Yeah,
okay.
Mentioned.
So we're okay there. But anyway, we're going to honor Andy Bogart, and then we're going to go to Mike Pelesi. Mike is coaching different schools, did a great job at Selma High School, and he's won a lot of games. Very dedicated person. Very dedicated.
Well, he was a really good coach at Selma. He found a bomb.
Mike won 362 games in 23 years. And recently, he's been coaching the Reed League girls basketball. And we're going to honor Mike. And then Nick Harold. I really like Nick. The job he did with the Kingsburg girls basketball teams over his years. And he's another person that was dedicated. I'm really big with people that are dedicated, whatever they do. Because that's when you have a special person, okay? You gotta have that. You gotta have it in your heart. It comes from your heart, Paul. Anyway, we're gonna honor them, those three. And they deserve to be honored.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so let's move on. You know, I wanna mention this, and I let it out the other night. We're all sitting together, you and I, Andy Bogard.
At Clovis West?
Yeah, Clovis West, Anthony from the Fresno Bee. And I let it out. I want to make sure he gets the coverage that he deserved. Craig Campbell, the girls basketball coach from Clovis West, and he's dedicated, and you can see it. But the main thing I want to talk about, if everything goes to plan, don't count your chickens before they hatch, he could become the winningest girls basketball coach in section history. Right now he has 463 wins. The section record is 464 by Doug White from Corcoran. And I hope Doug's there that night. That would be really special. So he needs to win Tuesday night and win the championship at Salem Arena. That's going to be that's a big deal.
It is.
Especially for me. It's a big deal. And I want people to know that. Okay? So that's something to look forward to next week.
Absolutely, Bob. And I love talking with you. You are an incredible wealth of knowledge. You're passionate about what you do. You respect people that hone in on their craft and are dedicated. And I mean, you bringing samples of your hard work here in the show, First String Sports. You mentioned how that box has never seen the light of day.
No.
That's something that you're invested in. For you to share all that with our audience and with people out there is to be commended. You're very appreciated throughout the Central Section. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, you're welcome, Paul. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All
Bob
right.
Barnett, Central Section historian. Oh, that is just the very, very, very tip of the iceberg of all the records that he has in the Central Section. A pure joy to talk to you. Thanks to Bob for coming on the show. After the break, we'll be talking with Gabe Camarillo, host of Home Field Advantage, about more basketball, the games that we are able to go to this week, and preview the games for next week. Coming up on 1430 ESPN. What a great conversation I wish I was able to have with Bob Barnett. And I hope you guys were able to listen to the whole interview. You know, Bob is—he's a wealth of knowledge, and he's also sentimental, right? You don't dedicate most of your life, as he told the story, how from when he was 12 years old, you became hooked on high school sports. you don't put most of your life into something and not be passionate about it and not be sentimental. And he certainly was. And you know, he got choked up a couple times during the interview. And that just shows how passionate, how much it means to him. And for him even to come into first string sports and bring his box with his binders and his records, he mentioned it. Like, that box has never left the house. And for him to bring that here and share with you guys, share with the audience, you know, what he's dedicated his life to, and, you know, stats that are important because they mean something, right? The people mean things as well to everybody. So just thanks to Bob. And, you know, he's very approachable. You could go up to him and you could talk basketball and the history. And again, his records go back before the 1900s, which is remarkable. And his house, I'm not kidding, his house has just binders and binders neatly organized of the history. And he mentioned, too, they're not archived electronically, right? If those records are lost, they're lost forever. So it's up to a lot of the people that are in the central section to keep those records going, to keep the memories going, to remember the names of central section, boys and girls basketball, boys and girls boys and girls softball, baseball. All the sports, they're important. They mean something. All those names, there's stories behind all of those names that are listed. So Gabe Camarillo, man, if you and I ever go to Bob Barnett's house, we'd be like two kids in a candy store. We'd probably be, you know, whatever Bob would allow us to look at, we'd probably be sitting on the floor just going over through the central section history. But, man, I mean, just the passion that he puts in is a nice reminder of how important the people are and the numbers are to central section people here in the central section.
And there's a reason why anytime you find a record or I find a record, the first person we call is Bob Barnett to verify that record, right? Because Bob knows all, he's seen it all, and hearing his stories with you in the last segment, it was a treat to listen to.
No, absolutely, I agree. And talk about dedication, Gabe, and he admires people that are dedicated to their craft. You took a drive yesterday, and you were able to go watch San Joaquin Memorial on St. Joseph. I've been waiting all show to talk to you about this game. San Joaquin Memorial falls to St. Joseph, 6-3 games, 65-63. First of all, describe the atmosphere. I don't think people realize, first of all, a lot of people don't realize where St. Joseph's is, but describe the gym and the atmosphere and, you know, what that game was like.
Yeah, so you hop on the 41 South, you go all the way down to the 101, then you take the 101 past San Luis Obispo, past Pismo Beach, past Arroyo Grande and Napomo. Santa Maria might be one of the furthest towns from Fresno in the central section. A three-hour drive, but it was worth a three-hour drive because, as you mentioned, it was a very close and entertaining game. Let me describe the gym for you real quick. It is truly a cracker box gym. Like, I've heard Nick Anderson describe it like that because he went with Clovis West when they were in the Open Division semis at St. Joseph a couple years ago. And so when Nick Anderson described it to me like that, I'm like, okay, sure, I'm sure it's bigger than that. No, it's a small gym. It's smaller than Memorial's gym. I would say probably like 300 or 400 people inside there. It was very packed, a lot of people there, very nice facility, and it's a lot of personality in that gym. I think that's the word Tom Ott used to describe it to me, and I like that word, the personality in the gym. You have Dunk City on the wall, you have a court that's a gray, the big black and green St. Joseph letter logo in the middle of the court. Just a lot of personality in there, a lot of noise because this was a close game. And I do think the home court advantage played a factor when it came to crowd noise. It got really loud in there when Memorial had the basketball. But the fact that this game was close was no surprise to me because I knew Memorial could stack up well with St. Joseph. And the way they did it, first of all, they were undeterred by St. Joseph's athleticism because they had athletic dudes too. Tunde Yusufu, when he had a big block, the crowd went crazy. When he had a big steal he didn't have a dunk, but he had a lot of athletic plays. And typically, those could be demoralizing for the other team, but Memorial never wavered. I'll tell you what, Paul. St. Joseph went up 7-0 really early, like within 30 seconds. And I thought to myself, oh, here we go. This is going to be a blowout. But Memorial answered back with 6 straight points, and that's when I knew that this was going to be a close game for all 4 quarters. St. Joseph likes getting out in transition. They like getting fast break dunks. Memorial did not allow that one bit. There was not one single dunk in Dunk City last night for the Knights, and I think that's a big part of why the Panthers were so competitive. They made this a half-court game. St. Joseph loves to play fast, and San Joaquin Memorial slowed it down, and their defense, Paul. I have to give such credit to Memorial's defense because they made Tunde work for his 27 points. He was 10 of 21 from the field. He took a lot of threes. He missed a lot of threes, but he did make a couple big ones. And I'll tell you what, I think if you're able to slow down St. Joseph and really play a half-court game, that could be the way to beat them. But even doing that didn't help Memorial because St. Joseph came out on top 65-63.
And I saw the dedication to defense from San Joaquin Memorial's and when they played Clovis East earlier in the week, and we talked to Coach Brad Ross. He's been on your show. He's been on my show. Great guy. How they made a really dedicated effort to step up their defensive game, and it showed in that game against Clovis East, but it sounds like they played really good defense against St. Joseph's as well. I want to mention, too, Gabe, you posted it on Twitter. A little bit of a controversial ending. I know we're supposed to be neutral, but I just want the people to know, how did the game end? I believe it was 63-63. Julius Olaraju made a shot, and then St. Joseph's came down, and what happened after that?
Yeah, so some backstory up to that, right? It was 15-14 after the first quarter. St. Joseph led. Then it was 30-29 St. Joseph at halftime, and it was just back and forth. I think the biggest lead after St. Joseph went ahead 7-0, the biggest lead after that point, because Memorial closed the gap, was probably late in the second quarter. St. Joseph opened up a 56-51 lead with about 4.5 minutes left. And at that point, Memorial could have folded. You know, the crowd was loud. It looked like it was getting away from them. Ross calls a timeout. Right after that timeout, Abram Potts hits a three, and then Dre Davis hits a three. And all of a sudden, Memorial was trailing by five. Now they're leading by one. But then Tunde answers right back with the three. St. Joseph back in the lead, and they keep the lead the rest of the way. But as you mentioned, Paul, it was 63-61 with about 53 seconds left after Mike Davis scored. And then Julius Olaraju gets the game-tying bucket with just 20 seconds left. That was a huge bucket. He was able to get a pump fake. He juked out Caden Hamilton. He juked out Tunde Yusufu, and he got a wide-open jumper. But then Julius Price, he kind of comes down the court. He goes to his left. He goes right into both Amari Caraway and Gerald Perry Jr. It looks like Gerald Perry tries to force a jump ball. He got both hands on the basketball, but he did make contact with Julius Price. Julius Price jumps into the air. The referees call a shooting foul with just 3 seconds on the clock. Julius Price, he's a good shooter, man. I'm really impressed with multiple St. Joseph Knights. Caden Hamilton, Tunde, Julius Price. I knew when Price got fouled, he was going to make both his free throws. But was it a foul, right? And you're right, I'm trying to stay neutral too. I have not said on social media whether I think it's a foul or not, but I've just given the public video, two different angles of the foul, and I'll let the public decide for themselves.
Yeah, tough call, right? In a situation like that, sometimes you like to see, you know, the kids, you know, something obvious, and you like to see the kids win the game. But yeah, I mean, St. Joseph's made the plays to win the game. Eventually, they advance, and they're going to be facing Bakersfield Christian, the game that I was at. They beat Clovis North last night, 60-57, a game that Clovis North had multiple chances to score, just couldn't come up. Couldn't come up with the big shot late in the game. Bakersfield Christian advances as the 7th seed to face St. Joseph. So St. Joseph's gets a home game, so they're going to be traveling to Santa Maria. On the upper part of the bracket in Division One, Clovis West advances. They beat Mission Prep, and Stockdale beat Centennial, right? That's a game that we were pretty interested in down at Bakersfield. They've met each other a few times. Those games have been really close, but Centennial, unfortunately, was missing their best player, Rippin Gill, 6'6", good scorer, and Stockdale took advantage, and they won that game. So they're going to match up against Clovis West. So, again, Clovis West will be facing Stockdale at home on Wednesday, February 22nd, St. Joseph's Bakersfield Christian. Gabe, what do you think about Clovis West and Stockdale? I'm going to be there. I think you're going to be there too, right?
I'll try to be there. It depends on how my ABC 30 schedule goes. Okay. I might be there with ABC 30, or I could just be there for ESPN Radio. We'll see.
All right. Sounds good. So, yeah, what do you see in that matchup? You know a little bit more about Stockdale than I do.
Yeah, well, I've seen Stockdale once against Hanford. They got some athletic guys. I don't know if they'll lose to Clovis, or if they'll beat Clovis West, rather. I think Clovis West is playing really well right now. Obviously, they won by 18 over Mission Prep last night. Haven't seen any stats from that game yet, but I think Clovis West – the way that they were playing at the end of this season, I think those back-to-back losses to Modesto Christian and Clovis North really awoke something. I know you talked to Jackson Young on the show a couple weeks ago, and he kind of spoke to that a little bit, saying how that was the wake-up call they needed. They were missing layups. They were turning the ball over, and they really fixed those two issues since the two losses against Modesto Christian and Clovis North. So I think they should be able to advance to the Celent Arena. I don't want to denigrate Bakersfield Christian or Stockdale by saying this, but I'm really thinking it's going to be Clovis West and St. Joseph in the Division One final. And what I'm really curious about would be, can St. Joseph get revenge for last year's loss? Because it seemed like they got tired late in that game against Clovis West last year. Do they get tired again this year? You know, I mentioned that they, if you're able to play a slow half-court game and you can match up with them athletically, that could be a ticket to beating them, but Clovis West can't do that, I don't think, because they don't have someone to guard the 6'9" center, Caden Hamilton, who is probably, if we had awards in the Central Section, he's winning Most Improved Player of the Year, because Caden played less than 5 minutes a game last year. He averaged just 2.6 points a game coming off the bench. This year, he's a double-double machine. He's averaging 11 and 10. He's 6'9". He's the biggest mismatch in Division One. So I know you asked me about Clovis West Stockdale. I do think Clovis West advances, but if they advance and face St. Joseph, then we have an entirely different question on if they can stop St. Joseph and all the size that they present.
Oh, we do, and that's we've talked all season, Gabe, about these two programs, a lot, Clovis West and St. Joe's, and yeah, they're just one game away from matching up again. A lot of us believe St. Joseph's has been the better team all season. Hey, well, that's why they play the games. We'll be able to watch them next week. Can't wait for that. And Gabe, the story on Sunnyside boys basketball is pretty remarkable. If you missed the first half, I recapped a little bit. So they're in Division II. They beat number one Lemoore 53-42 on the road, obviously. It's only the second time in Central Section history that 16 has beat a one. Now, one of the stories in that game, there was a little skirmish, right? Some fisticuffs. And players were kicked out of the game. They had to miss the game against Ridgeview. We didn't think they had a shot, right? Three varsity guys for Sunnyside were available. They had to bring up four guys from the JV team. They actually finished with those four guys from the JV team they brought up against Lemoore. They held on to beat Lemoore. They go on and they beat Ridgeview by a point, 69-68. I know you had Coach Duckworth on your show before the Ridgeview game, and he tweeted out, man, I can't believe it. They're all celebrating in the locker room. That was incredible. But what a incredible story the Sunnyside Wildcats are so far this year.
You know, it reminds me of when Sunnyside made it to the Division One semifinals after they beat Clovis West in Division One a couple seasons ago. That team, though, had some studs, Amari Stroud to name a couple of them. But I do want to say this about Sunnyside. You're right. I had no, like, when you have seven guys, I had no faith that they would win that game. I'm going to be honest, right? And Coach Duckworth could be listening, and he probably could agree with me, right? Or at least he could agree with the idea that people didn't believe in his team because of the lack of bodies. And that Lemoore game was very controversial. I know a lot of Lemoore fans upset about the officiating in that one. They felt that there should have been more people ejected from Sunnyside, although a lot of people were already ejected. They also felt that the calls really went against them for the most part. But I do say this about Sunnyside. They had a lot of adversity, just straight up, at the start of the season when you have eight of your players playing football and your football team makes it to the Valley Championship game, you can't start your season until December. So that's the first bit of adversity that they faced. Now the second bit of adversity, here in the playoffs, they have a fight, you know, that happens, tempers flare, it's the playoffs, emotions run high. I don't condone it, but I understand it. So with that being said, because of that fight, they faced the consequences. They had to lose some of the players. They only had Tanner Wilson, CJ Jones, and Malachi Barnes available when it comes to varsity players. Then they had four JV guys. Ridgeview's a good team. Ridgeview gave Bakersfield Christian battles both times they faced in league play, and obviously beat Bakersfield Christian's in the Final Four for Division One. So they played a really good team, Sunnyside did. And they won by one in overtime with seven players. I can't believe this, Paul. Sunnyside might just be a team of destiny. I'm going to pencil them in to go to Celent Arena. Although Porterville is playing well, Porterville's the team that they face now in the semifinals. Porterville just beat Clovis last night. So, you know, maybe Porterville has something different to say, but it seems like this is made for a movie almost, because I think Sunnyside, the way that they're playing, Corey Duckworth has that team bought in. They're having fun. They're really embracing this role of being an underdog, being the 16 seed. They were really underseeded. NYL got underseeded across the board. Hoover almost beat Sierra this week. So it's like, I would not be surprised to see a 16 seed Sunnyside Wildcats team at Celland Arena playing for the D2 championship next Friday night, 8 o'clock.
I wouldn't either. And the bottom of the bracket for D2, Dinuba got past Central, 51-39. Rio Grande beat Liberty. A lot of us had Liberty to go, you know, pretty darn far in Division 2 because they've played a really tough schedule. But the number 2 seed of Rio Grande holds on. So that's going to be a great Final Four. I want to mention Division 3 a little bit. Got to give some love to Division 3 and 4. Sierra got by Hanford, and West beat San Ynez. So they're going to be playing next Wednesday at Sierra High School. And then Kingsburg, the Road Warriors, going to be taking another trip down the 99 and facing Independence. In Division 4 basketball, Kerman is going to advance to play Napomo. Central Valley Christian lost to Tulare Western. Tulare Western advances. And Washington Union, the 7 seed, beat number 2 Corcoran. So those are the Final Four teams. And you're going back a little bit to Bob Barnett and the history of Washington Union. Washington Union and Edison have the Central Section record for most boys championships at 22. My alma mater, who got mentioned a little bit with Darren Pearson Jr. being one of the top scorers in Central Section history, they have 19 Central Section championships. So, yeah, this is Washington Union, man, they could add one more to that list. So I definitely want to mention then. And then, Gabe, let's go to the girls for a little bit. So Clovis West and Buchanan just had Coach Adam Wall and Alani Oliver on the show. I hit it on a little bit. So I asked her, well, you know, when you're so familiar with a school like Clovis West, how do you change your game plan going into playoffs? And he basically said, well, you just got to hit shots, right? You just got to stick with the game plan, and you just got to hit shots when you're playing against a top-tier program like Clovis West. In the bottom bracket, we haven't mentioned this yet, St. Joseph's, we mentioned their boys program. They got a really good girls team. They are the 3 seed. They advanced by beating San Joaquin Memorial 57-51, and they're going to be playing Clovis. The Clovis Cougars advanced by beating Clovis East 56-51. So St. Joe's traveling to Clovis on the top bracket, Clovis West and Buchanan. Hey, that one played out as thought. Top 4 seeds advanced, Gabe.
Yeah, Memorial, I heard, had the lead for almost the entire first half. Then Alexis Willis goes down to injury. She's one of their best players. So when you lose a 6'3 center like her, that's really going to hurt you. And it did. I think Avery Kane had a great night. It's funny because the St. Joseph boys basketball program prides themselves as Dunk City. The girls program is all about raining threes. They have a threes leaderboard in the gym. Avery Kane, the smooth left-handed jump shooter, she leads it. And from what I saw on social media and from what I learned talking to some people who were at the game on Thursday night, I think that Avery Kane could be a difference maker in this game against Clovis High. Now, she was a difference maker the first time these teams faced, which was also at the Clovis High South Gym, a game that St. Joseph won. But because of the Max Preps formula, right, Clovis was more than 2 rating points ahead of St. Joseph. So Clovis gets to host St. Joseph again, despite St. Joseph already beating the Cougars head-to-head. I don't know how the second game is going to go because you also have to keep in mind that first game was Sadie Sin's first ever varsity game. So Sadie Sin has grown a lot since then. It's going to be really fun to see the established Avery Kane versus the young freshman Sadie Sin. That's a point guard matchup to watch. But the real X factor in this Clovis St. Joseph game will be Candace Petticoat. She is headed to Washington State for St. Joseph. She is a tall center. I'm not sure Clovis has someone of that size to guard Petticoat. So Petticoat could have a double-double on Tuesday night, and she could be a real problem to handle inside the paint. How Clovis High handles her will determine whether Clovis High advances or St. Joseph advances to Celland Arena on Saturday night.
Yeah, lots of storylines in that one. And from what I hear, Gabe, I haven't seen her in person. Avery Kane, only a junior. People are saying she's the best player in the Central Section, left-handed. She's smooth. I've seen some clips of her. She could shoot the three. She could take it to the hole. She's going to be a load for Clovis. So, yeah, so the Final Four set, Clovis West, Buchanan, St. Joe's, Clovis, really fun on Tuesday. Definitely going to be checking one of those out. I want to mention, too, Division II girls, Orcutt Academy, the number 1 seed. They advanced. They're going to be facing Tehachapi. Tehachapi is a team, Gabe, that we've seen in the rankings. Obviously, that's a long drive for us as well. You mentioned Santa Maria. Tehachapi is a long ways away as well. They got a really good girls program. They beat El Diamante 72-65. So Orcutt Academy is playing Tehachapi in Division II semifinals. Sierra Pacific lost to Liberty of Bakersfield at home 54-41. Liberty Bakersfield advances to play Mission Oak, who beat Menachie. The 7 seed beat the 2, 48-44. That's one that we had our eye on too, Gabe, because we've talked about Menachie throughout this season. They got a ton of freshmen, so they'll definitely be back. So the final four in Division II, Orcutt, Tehachapi, Liberty, Bakersfield, and Mission Oak in that one. In Division III, actually, let's skip to Division IV really quick. I got that one up. Emmanuel beat Cabrillo 42-19. They advanced to the semifinals. They are the 1 seed. They're going to be playing Tulare Union, the 12 seed that beat Garces in a good one, 64-63. Corcoran loses to Lompoc 45-40, and Miramonte beat Hoover. That is a 2 seed, Miramonte 58 over the 10 seed, Hoover 43. So Gabe, tons of action, man. I can't wait. Selden Arena is going to be rocking next week. Again, we got semifinals on Tuesday as Wednesday as well. You have any final thoughts? You got any little nuggets of information for the people out there about some of these games next week?
Just be ready. I mean, we have the schedule for Selden Arena, obviously, so you're going to have D6, D4, and D2 on Friday, and then on Saturday you'll have D5, D3, and D1, and Bob mentioned that they're going to have D1 girls at 6 o'clock Saturday night, D1 boys at 8 o'clock, and in between the D1 girls and boys game, they're going to have some honorees for the Central Section. You mentioned Andy Bogart and a couple other very, very familiar names. Of course, we'll have a show next Saturday, so we'll be able to preview the D5, 3, and 1 games and probably talk about the D6, 4, and 2 games. So same time next Saturday, Paul?
Absolutely. And your show, Home Field Advantage. Are you going to have a show on Monday?
Yes, Thursday, I will. Right? Yes, I will. I have to, man. We have so much to talk about.
I know, absolutely. So 3 to 5, make sure you check out Gabe's show. Does an incredible job talking to coaches and players up and down the Central Section. I mean, Gabe's got 2 hours every day to talk about this stuff, and we love it. Absolutely. I want to give some love right now to Division III girls. Number 1, Bakersfield Christian is going to be playing Fresno High, local team. Fresno High beat Ridgeview 52-38, so those teams are in the semifinals. Hanford beat Kerman 52-41. They'll be facing Porterville, the 2 seeds, so the top 4 seeds hold up in Division III girls. Bakersfield Christian, Fresno, Hanford, and Porterville. Good job by you, Gabe. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
All right, coming up, we'll be wrap everything up here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Your host, Paul Metters. Thank you guys again for tuning in. And we do this for you guys, and hopefully you guys are able to understand, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and with high school sports, and give a lot of love to players out there. I do want to mention Bullard High School Baseball. Cam Schneider, Fresno State commit, threw a no-hitter last night against Clovis High. He won 3-1. I think he did it on like 78 pitches. Fresno State commit, Cam Schneider, no-hitter against Clovis for Bullard. Buchanan Baseball, they played today. I'm going to go check that out. They're playing Bakersfield Christian High School, who are here as a really good team. So I'll be heading over there to Buchanan to check that out. Thank you to First String Sports. Thanks to Joe Gomez as well. Thanks to Jorge. Thanks to Gabe Camarillo. Chris Schultz, former athletic director at Fresno Christian Boys Basketball Coach. Thanks to Adam Wall, Alani Oliver of Buchanan, and Bob Barnett, Central Section historian. Have a great week, everyone, and talk to you soon.